Hey, fabulous people. This is Camille Forte, and you are tuned in to the Get a Hand Up podcast so that you can get a hand up in your business, particularly marketing. But we're going to do a little something different today. We're going to touch upon something that's been a bit of a spicy subject. And of course, with me as always, speaking of spicy, I have with me in the studio... That was a damn good intro. Did you not hear the intro? What's your friggin' name this week?
I am John Cena.
John Cena.
Doctor of the Thugonomics. Wait. My applause.
If I wanted to give away the topic of the podcast being like remote work, stay at home workers or work from home, John Cena would actually be such a perfect example because of how little he was actually out in the ring last year.
Don't be hating on the Doctor of Thugonomics.
I'm not hating.
He's going to be in a new Transformer movie. Don't be hating.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, you know. If you follow the WWE, you probably haven't seen much of them. But
side note, my daughter's a big John Cena fan. When she hears this, she's going to cuss me out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we're taking on a spicy topic today because it does affect your marketing. You know, I usually go for the strong marketing and strategy topics, but this has really been a hot button, a very spicy debate as of not only as of late, but for a few years now. And I have seen both ends of the spectrum. I have seen companies that are all for remote work. I have seen companies build literally successful empires based on remote work. I have seen companies who are very much old school and find it literally unthinkable. And I have also seen, you know, and this will be sort of a side note that we have to go into, companies who hire quote-unquote freelance consultants but treat them as employees, which can get you in some trouble. So where to start? My gosh, yes or no?
You know, I'm going to kind of debate you on this. Now, you know, as people that personally know you and me, outside of me being this persona of your sidekick on the show and Mr. Statistician and you being the host.
You mean John Cena of Thugonomics?
The Doctor of Thugonomics, thank you very much.
Pardon.
The thing is, the people that actually know Camille Forte and Michael, I'm reluctant to say my last name, but a famous boxer, but that know that you and I actually met through a company that promoted and encouraged remote employees.
Yeah. And it's actually, I find it pretty strange that the start of my digital career and my full-blown geekdom
was on an IKEA chair in front of your TV.
No, Mr. Dr. Cena.
It was.
Finish.
Okay.
So I, you know, a few years out of... Would you quit it? Quit it. Okay, so a few years out of... surviving one of the country's toughest MBA curriculums, I find myself in a very unique company, foreign-owned, U.S.-based, national, well, it was actually a global company, but we worked more so for the divisions dedicated to the United States. And because there was a main office in headquarters, San Francisco, and there was at the time no office here on the East Coast, those of us who worked from the East Coast worked from home. And so that was, for me, that wasn't I didn't even sneeze at that, because when you've been through college a couple times, graduate school, post-grad education, you're accustomed to your home being sort of a viper's nest of work, and knowing I have deadlines and I have responsibilities. So that work ethic is literally whipped into you. I'm not exaggerating. It hurt that much. But it's whipped into you. And I am very sorry to say that I've seen both sides of that coin, even in that company alone. I saw other people who were in my position, you know, coworkers, who busted their tails and excelled. Not many, but I also saw, I'd say about an even split, you know, of those who busted their tails versus those who just really took advantage of the situation.
It was, I wouldn't say it's an even split, because it's a case by case situation. We're getting back into the topic of remote work. Some companies embrace it, encourage it, and encourage the culture, because it is a cost-saving measure that could save sometimes a big, large company, you know, billions of dollars a year from office space and everything, where other companies that I would say that needs the more hands-on approach kind of frown from it, because, you know, it couldn't, you know, promote cultures in which people work for themselves, they're too busy doing other things. So I'm going to touch into that in a moment. I'm going to hijack this podcast from you, because I just finished typing with a friend of mine, and he gave me some interesting statistics about his startup and how much it cost him to open up an office and all these things that he had to put into it before he decided to go remote. So,
well, I'm going to let you hijack it, because you always have good numbers. Mm-hmm. But I want to start out by saying, whether you are for or against, 52% of employees in our workforce today in the United States work remotely at least once per week. So whether you are for or against it, this podcast does apply to you, and can help you better understand why you should, why you shouldn't, what are, you know, the advantages, the disadvantages, and how you can get in trouble. So
here I am going to hijack your podcast.
Dr. Cena, take it away.
So, Chris, very good friend of mine, his cousin actually does, I don't want to say what he does for his line of work, because it's a very competitive business, but he wanted to open up an office. His dream was, once he graduated from U of A, he's a, you know, fellow Wildcat.
Woohoo!
He went to McGuire, just like you.
Really?
Yes. And he gave me statistics, and I, without, you know, out of respect for my cousin, you know, my friend, it's funny, my friend's Chris's cousin named Chris. So, it's, yeah.
Let us just, can we at least give some assurance to the audience that, yes, this is a legal venture?
Yes, pure legal. Okay, let me go ahead and say it. He actually does sales and home renovation. So, in other words, if there's a real estate agent that needs a furnished home, so his team goes and furnishes the home, such as, like, if somebody says, I need this home for business, you know, like for business partners coming and flying in for the week or staying for a month, they furnish it. Even down to coffee makers and even food and hospitality and everything for that place. So, for an example, one of his clients is someone that's very kosher. She eats kosher, so she has to have kosher food, kosher linens. She's from India, so when she flew in, her whole apartment that they renovated. They do maid service, they do cleanings, they prepare meals, they do everything to make sure this person is fully kosher. So she's like, in other words, it's a home away from home.
So like a totally customized domestic.
They also do Airbnb, so from people that want to do Airbnb. I mean, this is where I kind of didn't want to get into what Chris does, but, you know, hey, shout out to Chris. But what it was is that when he first started getting reps and supplies and everything to the at his home base location, he was paying $4,500 a month for a 3-office kitchen, break room, and a floor deck, a whole 10 cubicles. Now, for some dad listening, I say, hey, $4,500 a month is not bad. Okay.
For a lot of companies, that's nothing.
That's nothing. He actually got a good deal. It was an open space that the leaser wanted to get leased right away. Mm-hmm. He got in, but then he started realizing $4,500 a month. Then you take the cost of Comcast Business, you know, getting basic internet service, then phone lines, and then you have to get mail routed there. Then you have to have an IT person to make sure all your IT equipment on site is working. And then getting a secretary, and then also, you know, a travel assistant. Insurance. So he looked at his costs, and it was almost $13,000 a month just to run an office that was only being utilized by four people, 8 hours a day.
Is that including Chris or not?
Not even including Chris, because he's on the field, you know, closing deals, you know, inspecting properties to make sure that they're met to client standards. So what he did was, like, you know, when Chris and I were just chatting a few moments ago, as, you know, we started the podcast, Chris said to me, I actually talked, this is the cousin Chris, mm-hmm. you know, we started talking directly. He said to me, he's like, Mike, what I started to do was I decided let's go remote. So I had all my guys that had all their cleaning supplies. Rather than spending $13,000 a month, I would just invest that money into cleaning supplies, into food, into whatever we need to renovate. And we would have the cars, the trucks that they use, just parked at his house. So they would drive to his home, pick up the trucks, and they would load into the trucks whatever they needed, go to Costco, you know, go wherever their vendor locations are, pick up the supplies for that day, and then go to the locations, and then come back to Chris's home, you know, drop off the trucks and just drive home. Mm-hmm. He was saving $13,000 a month since he started doing that. All his salespeople that work are now working remotely. And it's funny, he, you know, had them mandatory for 8 hours a day, but now having them on a flex hours, because, you know, they have kids, they have school, whatever the case may be, he went from being a 9-to-6 operation now to be 24/7 because he has different people covering the phones at different times. So this was a great advantage going remotely. That being said, he did notice that two of the sales reps were abusing the remote policy as well.
Mm-hmm. So two out of four, that is like an even split.
Exactly. So that's when you brought that up, I wanted to bring this up because this was an interesting scenario that matched exactly what you were talking about.
Now, it's funny that you say that, you know, friends, family, flex schedule, because I have in front of me a report from Al Labs called How to Manage Remote Employees. And in there is a statistic that 51% of people who work remotely choose to do so in order to have better flexibility and work-life balance. Now, I've seen a lot of naysayers, particularly, you know, comments on LinkedIn, and I don't mean to offend anyone by saying this, but usually these comments come from those who qualify for organizations like AARP, if that's a nice way of saying it. Uh-huh. But they say, oh, but what about when they walk the dog or go to put laundry in and, you know, they're chewing up company time? Well, You also have the opposite side of the coin. It's nearly 7:30 p.m. I'm still completely, you know, glued to the laptop. They're the other side of the coin are people like myself who admittedly have problems with work-life balance, because if you have a strong work ethic and you appreciate the ability to work from home, sometimes work never stops. We don't want it to. It becomes sort of a, it's my safe place. Work is my safe place.
Mm-hmm. Millennial.
No, well, sort of anti-millennial.
I'm joking.
You know, that's in a way part of the argument, because let me see, I have it right here. Over 68% of job-seeking millennials are more interested in working with companies who offer remote work options.
Now, can I chime in for a second? Because I just saw that statistic also on my analysis. Now, let me give you that for those that are against remote work, this is a high reason why. Of that 68% that are saying, you know, of, you know, one, you know, of all the millennials surveyed, of those 68%, 72% of that 68 said that they would be doing other ventures outside of their primary work hours. So being a CEO and you're saying, okay, I'm going to let my employees work remotely. Do you want to hire a remote employee that's not going to be 100% invested in the hours that they're supposed to be investing into you?
Now, let me counter that argument by saying that I have seen a number of companies, I have worked for a number of companies or served a number of companies who thought that they were, you know, had a tightly run ship because people were reporting to the office every day, when in fact these people were either surfing Facebook, and if you think that you've got that nice security block on it, don't bother. There are so many ways to get around those, you know, in-office blocks of certain sites like Facebook.
Right down to your own smartphone.
Yeah, that's true. People on their phones for several hours in the day, people gossiping around the water cooler of what they heard about so-and-so. I've seen people who had musical pursuits working for a manufacturing and distribution company who actually had music production software open in the office and were making beats. Literally.
You got to start the Instagram career somewhere.
As you know, and the president and the owner of the company, they both thought that this guy was, you know, nose to the grindstone the whole time. And the fact was, he was in there making beats, surfing Facebook, doing whatever. So do not be, don't assume that because they're in your office and they're in a nice outfit, or at least business casual, if not a full suit, that they're devoting all of their time. Now, Dr. Cena, I see you got your hand raised, but I do want to point out that it has been shown that if you do have in-office employees, you get a much, much higher rate of productivity if you willingly allow them to check their Facebook or their social media or whatever platform they want to go check for, say, 15 minutes, maybe 3-4 times a day.
That's where I agree and disagree. I'll give a quick personal story. When I first started off with the company where Camille and I worked at, my son was born. It was an emergency C-section where my ex-wife had complications and we had to rush my wife to Walnut Creek, California, to Kaiser. My son was born and I ended up calling my CEO and saying to him, my wife just gave birth. This was on an early Sunday morning on March 23rd, 2008. And my CEO, you know, Mr. Sony said, you know, Tej Sony said, Michael, work from home. Don't even worry about it. Congratulations. We'll see you after next week. All is fine. And this is like a month after I started with the company. And it got to the point where I was so dedicated and loyal to working for the company. I was working at the hospital on the connected Wi-Fi. I had an unlimited plan through AT&T at that time, and I was using my phone as a hotspot. And I actually got yelled at by the CEO saying, you could get this done when you get back. Go spend time with your son. And because I felt so honored that he allowed me to work from home, even though just starting with the company a month before, I was very dedicated. And if anything, I saw that I was more productive while working remotely, spending time with Brandon, you know, because he was in an incubator for the first 2 months. So I was working from Kaiser in Walnut Creek. You know, I saw that I got more done remotely than I did by getting up, showering, getting on to the, you know, from 680 South to getting on 880 to the Bay Bridge, fighting for traffic, getting into downtown San Francisco, which took almost 2 hours a day there, then almost two and a half hours just getting back to my home. Then, you know, that is where, you know, remote work works. But in that same coin, like how Camille talked about people making beats and making music, I've seen you know, people abuse this system so bad.
Oh, yeah.
It makes it, you know, where it gets recalled. Like in 2013, the CEO of Yahoo, which is right here, Marissa Mayer, in 2013 made a controversial decision to ban Yahoo employees from working from home, even though she still worked on and off remotely. But she stated that she was the CEO. She had that privilege to do so. But I had friends that worked at Yahoo at that time, and let's just say they were pissed. They were upset because they were like, wait a minute, I get more done at home and I can still take care of the kids. I don't have to pay a babysitting fee. I don't have to fight traffic. I don't have to, you know, sit for 2 hours in traffic going each way to Palo Alto and, you know, in, you know, Silicon Valley. And a lot of them got disgruntled and left. They actually ended up going to Google. They went up to Facebook. Others went to the Bay Area. Some of them actually just opened practices. But Yahoo lost a lot of good people because of this controversial, questionable ban that they did in 2013.
And the irony is that one of the arguments for remote work is to expand the quality of your talent pool. Because for every one person in your immediate geographic area, for every one person who can do the job, there are hundreds more from around the country or further, depending on how far you care to cast your net, hundreds more who can do it better, cheaper, if not cheaper, with better work ethic, with more experience, with better training. And one thing that's interesting, you bring up the Yahoo example. There was a study done at MIT by Dr. Peter Hurst. And what he found in this study of a flexible work program was that 85% agreed that their stress was reduced. 80% said that morale and engagement improved. 90% said family and personal life improved. Those are all things that you would expect. What you would not expect was that there was a minimum of 62% of employees who felt more trusted and respected, and that those employees who feel trusted perform better, exert extra effort, and go above and beyond expectations. Give you a very personal example. It was, if I recall correctly, late 2008. I had a medical emergency and was being taken to the hospital, and I had my phone confiscated from me 4 times because in between bouts of screaming,
blood work and everything,
I was making client calls.
Mm-hmm. And I had to take your phone away from you.
Well, you took it away, I believe it was 3 times, until you went and snitched on me to the doctors and nurses, and they took it away for good.
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, I was able to talk Michael into giving it back. And when he told them what was going on, they took my phone and said, no, you have an emergency happening now. Your client calls can wait. And Michael is right. The company was... One thing I loved about that company was that it had one foot in the very progressive mindset and one foot in a very traditional mindset, meaning...
They had the perfect balance of the both.
It was. If you want to work from home, by all means, work from home. You have the resources. This is the information age. But at the same time, if you abused it, you're out. And I remember that when I was made a supervisor of the marketing division of the company, it then fell on my shoulders to become the manager of remote employees. And I had to learn how to, you know, sort of read between the lines, see who was actually doing their job, who wasn't. And I had to fire people. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't always easy. I remember the first time I fired someone, I cried. I didn't have any regrets. I knew I did the right thing, but
it was a best business call. It wasn't a personal call. It was a best business call.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if anything, this person was given more opportunity than they should have been to rectify the situation. They were given like 6 months to, you know, get back on track, so to speak, and they didn't. And so she had to go.
Mm-hmm. And that was nothing to your fault or the company's fault. She just abused the policy.
I'm sorry.
But let me give some interesting food for thought. We're going to go a little bit long on this podcast. I'm always anal about, you know, between the 24 and 30 minute mark. But this is such a big topic now as, like, for an example, one of the biggest companies that uses remote workers, Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you called Amazon's customer services, either to the Philippines or people in the States? I've actually joked with customer service reps saying, I think you're listening to the same serious big 80s on 8 radio station that I'm listening to right now. And personally, I personally feel, because Amazon does such a great job at what they do, that I don't personally mind when I call a customer service rep and I hear a kid, you know, like laughing in the background. I know they're at home. I don't mind, because my objective is to make sure that rep, which I've never, you know, knock on wood, never had a rep that I've ever dealt with at Amazon where they work from home that I had a bad experience. It was like, wow, this is a ghetto call. Where it was not.
I've had one. But if you keep that in perspective, that's one out of how many? Hundreds.
And I mean, it's not saying that Amazon's not doing a good job. They are. No. It's just sometimes it's just like we need to change our order, modify something, or ask a question. And even some of my closest friends that I game with, his wife, actually, she works from home, you know, for Amazon. I have two cousins that work from home from Amazon, but they're both new, you know, they're new mothers. So for them, it's the best dream job. They're able to make an income, able to help their home, you know, stay financially afloat, and they get to work from home and spend time with their children. Now, I'm gonna hijack this. Here's some interesting statistics, especially for small to medium-sized companies. Do not neglect the fact that working from home does cause more productivity. Number two, ask yourself this question. If I run an office where theoretically every employee, from my engineers to my IT guys to my customer service reps, can they do this work from home? Is it just cheaper for me to go out there and buy a bunch of laptops, assign it to people, and have them work from home, and we meet up once a week for lunch, say at a, you know, at a restaurant or, you know, a Starbucks or something, just to have a physical meeting? And even then, we live in a different, you know, information age where internet speeds are fast enough where we can have virtual meetings with cameras on people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not something, you know, people say, oh, no, that's being lazy. No, I've seen statistics. I've seen companies where when virtual work is allowed, productivity goes up sometimes 95%. Keep that number in mind. The same people that are getting up, and you know, the ones that are listening, you're probably getting up in the morning, exercising, showering, getting into your car, traveling to either a public transit station to take the train or BART or whatever, the bus to work, or driving actually to work. How much time are you utilizing between waking up and getting to your work?
What was your commute when you lived in the San Francisco Bay Area?
I'll give you an example for those that don't know. My commute, I lived in Pittsburgh, California, which is right past Concord, California in the East Bay. And for those that live in the Bay Area that are listening, it would take me approximately 2 hours from Pittsburgh, okay, off of Highway 4, 2 hours to get to the Bay Bridge and into downtown San Francisco. Unfortunately, because my dad works for Amco Parking, I didn't have to pay those ridiculous parking amounts to park for the day. But factors this in mind, I had to drop my son and daughter off at daycare. So that was another 25 minutes detouring off my traffic route, and another 30 minutes added to my commute coming home to pick up my son and daughter from daycare.
Now, for me, personally, that 2 hours is 2 hours that I am not picking out what I'm going to wear. I'm not looking for that other high heel because I found one but not the other. I'm not worrying about how my makeup looks. You know, 9 times out of 10, I look like I look like I'm going to the gym, basically. You know, and it's funny, I often make the joke that I look like a judge because I may have a nice blouse on top if I have a video conference meeting, but I may have my fuzzy pants on the bottom half. But that productivity means that I open my eyes, I go straight to the computer, I'm thinking about strategy. I'm coming up with new ideas. I'm wondering, you know, I am project managing my day, and that will go easily into a 12 or 14 hour day with minimal, if any, distractions. And by distractions, I mean food. I did admit poor work-life balance. I don't take enough time for, you know, healthy, you know, breaks and such. But I also, even though I'm a proponent of it, well, I'm a proponent of what I think it comes down to is how you manage. And I believe that that's why Owl Labs put out a report of how to manage remote employees, because only half of it is about, only half of it hinges on whether or not the remote employee has the right work ethic. The other half hinges on whether the manager has the ability to manage remote employees. If you take an out of sight, out of mind approach, you're guaranteed to be taken advantage of and have very unproductive employees. Go ahead, Dr. Sina.
Not to interrupt, but you know, I want to kind of give a cheat sheet of, you know, I'm talking to another friend of mine, and this is what she did. She was the CFO. And she wanted to do an experiment. And I asked Delia, and Delia said to me, she's like, Mike, the experiment I ran was I took 20 email reps that work on our floor and then told them to work 4 out of the 5 days a week, where Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, they worked from home, answering emails in the queue and doing everything. And she goes, for the first week, I let them do their normal hours, like, you know, from 10 to 7. Then the second week, she said, we started noticing that our queues were getting cleared up a lot faster. All of a sudden, people were logging in half hour early and staying a half hour later, even though, you know, she made it clear you don't have to work a half hour earlier or later. Mm-hmm. Then she said, you know, then she had the greatest idea. She saw when the biggest flow of emails were coming in, usually off hours, she allowed flex hours, meaning, okay, I'm going to allow people to give me the schedule for the email queue. When do you want to work? And again, they were able to go, you know, answer emails pretty much from like 5 a.m. Pacific time up to midnight, because there was somebody that said, hey, I want to work 4 hours in the morning, then I could go to school, and then I'll finish my 4 hours when I get home. And she was shocked, because when she talked to the email manager, the email, you know, email customer support manager, productivity went up, you know, almost 100%. People were so much relaxed. Like before, when they would come to work, they just looked tired, they looked ruggish. And she said that she saw these people, like one person looked like they were always about 1 foot, you know, on death's door. This person looked lively. And she said, it noticed, not only did it help the company, but it brought costs down, because when she looked at the electric bill and she saw like how the electric bill during those times for the email department went down because less electricity was used. So she started this, you know, this project with the customer service team, got VOIPs. Tell people, here, take this phone with you to home. You're going to work from home for 2 weeks. And she noticed that calls were being answered quickly. They were done more professionally. And without even being told, for the call center reps, they were answering calls in quieter environments at home. Then, you know, when they were at the office where there was noise in the background, and that not only that, she went online to, you know, the survey sites, and people were giving higher survey results saying, this person took time out to answer my questions, answer everything, do research for me. She said that the her average call in queue was 4 minutes, 52 seconds, which which is a long time, it dropped down to 94 seconds per call in queue, meaning you would only be on call with the highest was 94 seconds. The shortest was 2 seconds.
Which is great, you know, but let's talk about some higher level employees, you know, not just call centers, because I know call centers, you know, it can be a great alternative. If you've ever called Amazon customer service, one thing you may have noticed is that Amazon's customer service reps seem legitimately happy to help you. They actually seem as though they want to help you. And I love that about Amazon, and it's because they use remote workers. They save so much in overhead. At the same time, they're very well trained, but they're eager to help. They're genuinely eager to help. They don't feel that, who's next in line?
Yeah, they don't have the assembly line mentality.
Right, right. Now, at the same time, you know, you have some higher level employees. I do know of someone who recently did a company switch, and I'm going to be honest, I don't agree with her decision, but everyone's decision is their own. The company was doing some infrastructure changes, and the person was offered to keep their job rather than, you know, being laid off and going elsewhere. But that other office to which they would have had to have driven was a bigger commute. Maybe she was already commuting a good 60 to 90 minutes, and this would have been a 2-hour commute. However, and she was a pretty high level employee, definitely at the managerial level, they made her an offer where after she had gotten settled in at the new office with the new infrastructure, she would be able to work from home on Tuesdays and Thursdays, meaning Monday, Wednesday, Friday, she would go into the office, and Tuesday, Thursday, she could have worked from home. So really, that's 4 days out of the week that she doesn't have to worry about a commute or getting up and getting pretty and all of that. Or was it reversed? Was it Tuesday and Wednesday? She would have had to go in the office. The point is, either way, I disagree with her decision not to take the position, which would have been a lateral move as opposed to a layoff. The reason I say that is because when you have higher level employees, actually, let me back up and simplify this a little bit better. One of the biggest mistakes that leads to remote work crashing and burning is a managerial system that is not sufficiently engaged with the employees. What does that mean in English? It means get on Skype. Go ahead and tell people, I don't care how ugly you are. I don't care if you don't have makeup on. I don't care if you're in an inappropriately screen printed sweatshirt. Just get on Skype and let's talk business. And especially when you have higher level employees who have already proven their work ethic, otherwise they wouldn't be higher level employees. They're more likely to be trustworthy when it comes to remote work because they're thinking at that higher level. And if you can infuse their remote work with a lot more communication, checking in with them, having regular meetings with them. I don't mean those meaningless meetings where you just rehash what's already been hashed. I never understood that saying, when you rehash, do you hash it first? Anyway, the point is, it can expand your talent pool. It can expand the quality of employees, the talent pool from which you have to choose. It can severely cut overhead and business costs, but you cannot do that without taking those now, I'm sure your friend Chris, did he or did he not have to take managerial steps to make sure that those remote employees were doing their
jobs?
Well,
that's what I was going to get to, because I know we're reaching the 40-minute mark in a few moments. But so I wanted to give a quick checklist before we end the podcast. Now, for those that are interested in doing remote work, ask yourself these following questions. How many of my employees do I need here at the office that have to be mandatory to continue operating for day-to-day operations? Now, before you even ask that, you have to ask yourself, what type of business am I? Am I someone that is a virtual business, meaning I have a warehouse somewhere else, but only thing my office does is handle logistics, such as how much orders are placed, how much, you know, time is spent answering customers' phone calls, how many vendor phone calls. Then the second thing you want to do is say, okay, of these employees, how many of them do I need to have in the office physically to do what they're doing? Can they do this remotely? You know, you could offer an incentive saying, okay, well, I'm going to let you work remotely, but I need you, rather than doing 9 to 6, you're now going to do 8 to 5. And you could justify it by saying, because you don't have to spend those 2 hours coming into work or whatever the case may be. It's just literally you waking up, going to your laptop and answering, you know, calls or doing whatever you need to do. Also, think of it this way. If you are thinking about it remotely, you may want to say, okay, I'm going to keep the office for higher end, you know, clients or
meetings
and stuff like that. But then ask yourself this question. That same $4,000 to $10,000 a month you're spending in office space, that could be easily invested into finding new talent that comes to your company. You never know when that engineer could create that next app, or that service reps that bring, you know, excel at what they do and they bring new life to the company. There's so many sites out there. I'll list it in the blog, in the podcast, that, you know, you could rent office space. If you have to have packages and everything delivered, then you can easily downgrade into a shared office where these packages are delivered, they're secure. And for those that are saying, hey, office work is not for me, I mean, office work has to be me, I have to be in an office, think of downsizing. All that extra money that you're spending on office space to house workers that theoretically could do this job remotely could be back invested into your company, into your brand, into your marketing division, sales division, into R&D to develop a new product that you could possibly say to yourself, wait a minute, let's just do the math. Let's, you know, for giggles, you know, blanks and giggles. Think of it this way. If you're spending $10,000 a month just on office space to house a bunch of people that could do all this virtually, you're spending $120,000 a year. That $120,000 a year could easily be invested into R&D, where you could develop a new product or into the talent pool to find better talent.
That's what I was about to say. You could actually tap into the national talent pool, if not international talent pool. You can hire the best of the best and have your company be twice the size it is a year from now than it is today.
And then there's apps out there that you could have your employees install on their desktops or laptops, whatever they're using for work, where it's like a remote monitoring system to make sure they're not going idle. That you can make sure they're not wasting time on that machine by going on social media all day.
That's my point. Know how to manage them and you will be successful. And you will find that whether they're in office or remote, I would argue that the same ratio of productive versus non-productive employees, work ethic versus non-work ethic people, you will find both in office and out of office. Now, business owners, companies, employers, I do want to give you one warning. There are a lot of companies out there today who have used the freelance consulting model as a way to hire employees in office and treat them like employees, just so that they could cut down on other things. Like they want
They want all the benefits of an employee without paying the taxes, Social Security, and benefits.
And that has become such a wildfire trend that many states have now implemented laws where, you know, if you give someone a business card with your business's name on it, if you dictate their schedule, their hours, if you are the one who gives them the tasks to do, then the state will, if it comes down to an argument, the state will recognize them as an employee. So make sure you do it right, you know. But, you know, get out of your comfort zone if you are one of those old school thinkers. And remember that we are in the information age now. And especially if you have a company where it's, say, software as a service is what I was going to say. But even companies like Aetna, Cigna, healthcare companies, you know, they're not shipping a physical product, and a great portion of their workforce is all remote.
I mean, as the podcast is kind of drawing out to a close right now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to encourage Camille. I think the topic about freelance to employee ratio, like how we were just talking about a few moments ago, I'm going to do a separate podcast. It's going to be kind of not safe for work, because this is where Camille lets her hair down and my hair poofs out because I'm an islander. But I think that employers need to know the difference between hiring a freelancer and treating him as a regular employee versus what they should do. So what we're going to do is this. This is the first tier. We're going to go ahead and close out the podcast. I'm going to add some links. These links that you see on the podcast, you know, on Camille Forte's site, we're not endorsing these companies, nor they're paying us to say anything. These are just links that we feel, if you are going to go into the remote work area, that these are companies you may want to visit to use their goods and services to monitor remote employees. Who knows? This time next year, you may have nothing but all virtual employees, and you're actually in the black because you're not paying for an office. You're not paying for electricity or Comcast services or any of these things.
And remember, as an employer, as a business owner, as a manager, whatever you are, you also have more flexibility. You have the flexibility to say, hey, I'm bringing you on as a remote worker, but you have a probationary period, you know, to prove your work ethic and that we can rely on you working remotely.
Exactly. So let us know what you think. I know this is kind of a hotbed topic. You know, I kind of hijacked this podcast from Camille more than I wanted to.
Hot button, honey, not hotbed.
Oh, hot pocket. hot button topic. So see, I'm thinking about dinner. Hit us up with the hashtag Ask Camille. I'm going to bring this to a close so we can upload this tonight. And, you know, on our Camille Forte page where you see this podcast, hit up the second one that's linked NSFW. That's where Camille and I are going to get a little bit more dicey. Is that the word you use, Camille? Dicey?
Controversial, maybe?
Yeah.
NSFW, I mean,
not safe for work.
Well, it's about work, so...
Not safe for kids?
Yeah, not safe for kids. Yeah. Don't let your 8-year-old read it or listen to it. But we're all adults here, and we are talking about making your business better. And this is a way that you can make it better. It's just a matter of how.
So, okay, guys, if you want to hear more of this topic, we're going to do it on our second podcast that's linked to this. And we'll go from there. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, everyone. Remember, money comes and goes. Time is never replaceable. So be very careful how you spend that.
Take care.